Well, Schaefer, if Wikipedia's right, it looks like this is it. Master Grace's mansion. Hold on. What's that smell coming out of that trunk, though?
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the haunted mansion. Now everybody gather round, crowded in and abandoned. Any hope for your survival, your smiles on arrival quickly turn to terror once you learn this destination's final.
These marble busts, they follow us like screams behind the bending doors. Luigi's mansion's half as horrifying as what lies in store. Floating candles down the hallway, never ending, losing hope. I feel the walls close in upon my dome, no joke, a hatbox goes.
No windows, no doors, no doubt, no shout.
ADHD cast, Tony here. Today on the old cast, you're like tuning in, you're thinking it's Indie Comics time. No, we're not Indie Comics today. We're talking music. And back in the saddle, was here before to talk about his brilliant comic strip, laptop nerdcore rapper MC Lars. How are you, friend?
Hi, Tony. Thanks for talking to me again.
Dude, this is, of course, my honor, as I'm a huge fan of yours, as you know, as I fangirled out all over you when we talked last time about how much I love your comic and your music, of course, because it's like, and again, still, I love the new album, which we're here to talk about, but I'm sorry to say, Space Game's still my favorite.
Thanks.
Always That's and sweet. Forever, Space Game, no matter what. And of course, we're here with your new collaborator, somebody I've not met until just right now, from the depths of hell? New York, Schaefer the Dark Lord. Sir, how are
you? Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having us.
Welcome to the show. So this is exciting for me. So I get the thing from Lars. It's like, hey, Lars is doing a Kickstarter. I was like, whatever that is, click, purchase,
sold.
Before I was like, yep. And then I saw what it was and I was like, well, that's even better. So Schaefer, so Lars did his whole intro before. So people who've not heard, I'll link to that show so you can go back and listen to Lars and I nerd out. So Heller Schaefer, if people are unfamiliar with you and who you are, and tell everybody just a bit about you, and then we'll get into what this amazing Disney-based project is.
Sure. I am a rapper, and at some point in the past 20 years, I was kind of adopted by the nerdcore scene. And I've written a share of, like, you know, pop culture heavy songs, but I feel like my real angle is I write songs about sex and drugs and therapy and Satan.
Okay.
Usually dwell on pretty dark topics, but most of my stuff as I get older is more introspective and about emotional health.
And that's okay. I think we need to be here for that. And you've made your own David Lynch movie and then a song about the David Lynch movie, which is brilliant, people. Link in the show notes to that lovely piece of joy. I mean, honestly, I think you just made a song that everybody in the world has thought about a David Lynch movie. So I just appreciated that you are like, I don't think we're going to write the song, but I'm going to make the movie too. So that was amazing.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah. A huge David Lynch fan.
And yet we're not sure. Like, so did you go, have you been to the town where they filmed Twin Peaks? Have you ever been there?
Oh yes. Yeah. Snoqualmie Falls.
Yeah,
several times. Yeah. Been to the, to the diner several times, been to the waterfall several times and the building that stood in for the Great Northern Hotel. I've been to the, I went on like a little side trip one of the times and went and sought out some locations. Like I found the, sort of crumbling train tracks where Ronette Pulaski walked across. I'm a huge,
you're all in.
I'm such a Twin Peaks nerd. Yeah,
no, that's okay, that's excellent. I love that. Have you ever been there, Lars? It's worth a trip if you've never gone.
No, I want to go. I mean, I've definitely learned a lot about Twin Peaks from Schaefer, and I'm looking at now, like, so the Salish Lodge and Spa is a real hotel where they filmed the external shots of Twin Peaks Lodge. Mm-hmm. Have you ever stayed there, Schaefer? It's probably like mad expensive.
I've gone in. I've spent some money in their gift shop because they definitely know why Looky Loos are coming to Looky Loo.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Now, I went in Looky Loo back because I'm old. So I went, you know, when the show was out, like, you know, right after that. Like, that's when I watched that in real time.
I have the whole series on VHS with the original commercials from 1990. Yeah.
So. Seriously. Oh my God. I bow to you. I'm done. That's the show, everybody. Oh, wait. No. Okay. That's awesome. So you're a rapper. We know MC Lars is a rapper. So you guys you said you were adopted by the nerdcore scene. So like it was just one day you were like, rap busking on the street, and Lars came up when he was living in Brooklyn, and he put his arm around you, and he said, let me take you in. Let me take you in and adopt you. How did it work?
No, it wasn't like that, but I feel like Lars and I had a similar thing kind of happen, that we both started out making music, and we were just indie rappers, just kind of like doing our own thing. And at some point, 2006, 2007, this online community that was like interacting on bulletin boards was calling itself Nerdcore, because they were nerdy people. They were writing songs about nerdy stuff. And I think they just started identifying other people that were like, oh, here's a person, there's this indie musician who's doing this thing that definitely fits our criteria. They're part of our thing. And I was so excited that like more than 10 people were interested in what I was doing that I started playing like Nerdcore events, because I'm like, there are people there that are interested. And I feel like Lars like had really kind of carved out his own path before he even heard the term Nerdcore as well.
You were a laptop rapper. That was your thing. That was the laptop EP, which is the first time I saw you. Yeah, yeah. When you opened for Bowling Pursuit. Yeah.
That's what's up. Cool, Tony. Yeah, like and you saw me with Suburban Legends, and like my early years were doing the sampling pop punk bands and opening for them. But suddenly I did a show with Friend a Lot, and Shaper was open for that show randomly in Boston. And
in what, 2006?
2007, I think. January of 07. And it was like 1/5 the people who were coming to see Suburban Legends, but they spent so much more on merch. And I was like, oh, this is going to be the next 15 years of my business.
Nice.
Because it was like, they're enthusiastic. They didn't go to a lot of shows. They were really sweet and really generous. And pop punk is fine, but it kind of, I feel like the gimmick that I was doing in that scene only lasted so long. Cause then like guys like Asher Roth rapping over Weezer and all these other people were coming up doing it. So it wasn't to do the rap with a laptop by 2007 was kind of played out. Yeah. And then Nerdcore was about to be played out. It just took 2 years. And then after that,
you guys got a whole documentary though.
Yeah, that's true. Two documentaries, and we rode the nostalgia wave.
Nice.
And now so that's tight.
And now here you are writing your own nostalgia wave with this album. So the album, the 999 album, is a haunting look back on your Disney childhood, which again, for sure. I mean, and I'm a big Peter, like one of the five greatest books one of the five greatest books ever written is J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan. And I do, but you know, Tink is a monster. Right.
Right.
Right. So I love your Tink song, because the EP is out. Right. And so I have that, and the Tink song, I'm like, somebody, you guys get it. She's a villain. Like, everybody loves her. And I have little Tinkerbells. There's one right here. I have them all over my house. However, she's a bit of a monster. And I appreciated that you leaned into that. So what was the reason? Like, just you guys were like, you know, who needs to be taken down a peg? Those bastards over at Disney. Or is it like, you know what we love creepily for no good reason? Disney. What was the reason? How did you guys come to decide to do this, and why together?
Lars, you want to take it?
Well, yeah, I'll take it. So we went to Disney World. We toured right before COVID. We went on the Haunted Mansion ride. Mm. It was part of our tour. On tour, we just had time. And Schaefer had never been to a Disney park or Haunted Mansion. And we both were like, it was so cool seeing how much he loved it, seeing it for the first time. And I was like, I've always been so interested in the mythology of the Haunted Mansion story and different in its iteration in different parks. So I was like, gosh, wouldn't it be cool to make a whole record about the mythology of the Haunted Mansion? And I was like, Schaefer, we should do this. And then we were like, well, maybe it'd be more interesting to do some Haunted Mansion songs, because there are two on the album, but talk about all the other creepy stuff in the Disney world. And 999 came to mind as album, because you know, in the Haunted Mansion, they're like, there are 999 ghosts. There's room for one more. Ooh, spooky. Ooh, yeah.
And it's you. So here, you're the one more. Right. Love it.
Yes. So it's cool. And then the song, really, No Windows, No Doors. I mean, it's such a graphic thing. They take you in and they're like, you're not getting out, but there's always my way. And then the guy's hanging from the roof dead. And it's like, kids are like, is it a suicide? Who did the ghost murder this person? So the song is like, what happens when... the only way to escape is through one unspeakable act. Yeah. That was Schaefer's lyric, because like, we're like, we can't directly talk about suicide or something like that in a funny way. We have to talk about the themes in a way that touches on them tangentially. And I think, there's so much in Disney to talk about. Okay, so that's how we came up with the album.
That's hey! Awesome. Yeah, no, yeah. That's a great lyric, though. I mean, and the song bangs, by the way, too. I love it.
Thank you.
It's one of those ones that you can loop, and you just, like, I do all the, I'm the family chef. And so, like, that's music time for me. I haven't left the house without headphones since I was, like, 12. But, like, So I've got my little over-ear headphones, and I'm out there. And since I've got this, was it last week, you guys put the EP out. That has just been on. And it's only, like, 15 minutes, the EP, but, man, concert. But that one, like, that's the one that you're done, you just want to back up and listen to that one again before you start over.
That's so nice. Oh,
thank you.
It's so catchy and fun. And you guys made a video with the scenes from the movie.
There's a lyric video for it, for that song.
Yeah. And if that, and because those were the things from the trailer, you guys were, or does Disney, are there? No, you're like, Disney's not paying attention to us. Who the hell are we?
They flagged the video and they're getting all the revenue because it's their content, which is fine. But that was, that guy who did it had done like a lot of cool nerdcore YouTube, like lyric videos. And I think for like, Daddy Fat Snaps and some other people who are dope in the scene, so I hit him up the guy did that video and I loved how it came out, but we had to wait till there was enough footage for the trailers because we did it before the movie came out.
I thought it all is really fun. It's such a fun album. So it's like, so Schaefer, you said you like to do dark stuff, and there are some definitely dark stuff, and again, the Tink song, it takes you to places. But so is this, and you're saying as you get older, but this is, you're looking back on your childhood. So is that part of it? Or you're analyzing, like, as you're like, the music is kind of therapy. You're like also thinking back. I'm like, even because the G for Trauma song, like, holy shit, this is all facts. everything in there is true. You guys don't embellish anything. You just make it rhyme. So, which I love. So is that? Is that what this is? Is this like, you're looking at this dark place and you're feeling like, where did it come from? Oh, it's just always there. It's everywhere. It is the culture.
That's a great question. I think it's a number of different things for different songs. And a lot of songs, it was, you know, we wanted to like find the spooky stuff in the Disney universe. But as we started, like, we didn't have to start digging very deep to find out, like, everything is littered with death and trauma. And
tell me about your childhood.
We watched them with our mama. They were rated G, but they brought us trauma.
And supernatural stuff and witchcraft. There's all kinds of weird, dark things already existing in Disney. It's just there. So in a lot of them, it was like kind of pointing them out and really hammering on them to be like, no, really, look at this part of the movie.
Right.
In some cases, it was like just pointing it out to use like as a metaphor for kind of coping with some other kind of upsetting experience you've had, and kind of like in a way of like taking it back and whistling past the cemetery or whatever. If you know, you've suffered like loss, and maybe find like us kind of unpacking the loss in a particular song, somehow comforting. In some cases, like the Tink of the Fae, the Tinkerbell song.
And it will all happen again. But this time it happened in London, on a quiet street in Bloomsbury in the West End. In the house on the corner where the Darlings lived, George and his wife Mary and their charming kids. Michael was the little one, John was the middle one, Wendy was the eldest at 12, with an interest in unnatural beings. Her believing alone had invited some magical creature into the home. Pixie cut in purple, wings in pink. Last name Urbel, first name Tink.
That was just me being goofy because
name Urbel.
First name Tink. Yeah, because I had only recently learned about the sort of mythology of fairies and how they're different around the world. And specifically, they're mostly really mischievous and kind of destructive demons. Like, they're rarely, it's a very Western conceit to have them be like, you know, friendly and colorful and appealing to children, and I just thought that one was obvious. There was just a kind of a softball just hanging over home plate there to be to like
murder Wendy in the book. I mean, that's just what happens. That's not even like you don't even have to read into it. Like, point blank, she tells Toodles to shoot Wendy. So
So we took a song and we just took Peter Pan out of the story. We just made it about the Darling family and them dealing with this house monster
that
destroys their lives.
Yeah, I think it's fun, and it's because I love deconstruction, right? I mean, and I think, you know, I think deconstruction is an important way for us to engage with art, and I think that you guys are making art about art. You're commenting on it because that's what we do. Like, you know, it sucks that the first programs that are always cut in schools are art programs, but it's like, what do we do all day to entertain ourselves? Is art. We listen to music, we watch TV, we do whatever. That's all art. And our cars are designed a certain way by artists. And yet they're like, cut art, which is insane. But yeah, you guys just are leaning into the fact that no, we are shaped by art and we will continue to make it. And whether that, you know, so I think that is a fun way to do it, because if you're not thinking about it, it sits in there, it resonates with you anyway. And I think that's why the G for Trauma song is so smart, because whether you've thought, like you said, just calling it out, or like Tinkerbell is kind of a monster, you just call it out and people are like, oh yeah, I did feel a certain way, but I was so caught up by the goofy talking animals that are in all the Disney movies, right? There's always has to be that to distract you from the hideousness a little bit. So
it's interesting. I like that there are so many adult creatives now who grew up you know, being inspired by art or just being entertained by art, who are now able to look back on these things from their childhoods and like kind of take them apart and rewrite them and repurpose them and use it to kind of explain a point of view. You know, it's that whole thing of like art that is inspired by art and building upon it, fan art and fan fiction and anything like that, I find to be a lot of fun and a fun world to kind of play around in. And I mean, we make hip hop, and hip hop was like built on sampling. So it's also art made by art.
Art made by art. That's totally true. And so what was the, how does it work? So like you write together, is it you are writing separate and you share, you're like, you come up with the theme, or you're like, I've got that cool idea for a song, and then you send it and then you add stuff to it. Cause like sometimes you trade off, and sometimes like in the Magician's Apprentice one, you know, there's two distinct characters that you're playing. So is that part of the writing process? How does that work? Let's get nerdy and technical about it. What is it? And then when will Peter Jackson be making the 17-hour documentary about the making of this album? That's the follow-up question.
Right.
Well, we had to figure out what we're going to write about. And so we made like a Google Docs and we just added to it. And then we've tried to figure out, who, like, some songs I wrote all the lyrics, some songs Schaefer wrote all the lyrics, or I'd write parts and he'd write a verse. So it was a lot of emailing back and forth. And then we wrapped it over like temporary beats that our producer Rich Matthew changed a bit, and that would change the flow. But a lot of it was really seamless, because it was like the Black Cauldron song, for example. I really love that movie, so I took the reins on that. The Tinkerbell song was all Schaefer's idea. So then I came in to do a verse about malevolent supernatural entities in other cultures, and so it was like, that was fun. So it's like we it was about 50-50 on the concepts, and then we'd do scaffolding for the other person to finish them. So it was pretty tight.
We definitely were experimenting with different ways of collaborating that we hadn't done before. They felt like they were all kind of had their own structure to them that we hadn't really done before, and it really worked well, because we have a long history of working on music together before this album. And so we were able to just kind of really play with it.
So you've got a shorthand. And so you're not that far away from each other geographically. So did you go and record together? Or did you record separately?
No, it's all recorded separately. All of the writing and all of the recording was done separately. I've seen Lars a couple of times during the process of working on this album, but the times that I've seen him, we have not worked on the album at all. We've talked about it. We've used it to update, but we did a photo shoot. We talked about the album then.
But we didn't do any recording.
No.
Yeah.
That's all been done online.
And that was cool, because like we have our little home studios. I mean, it's interesting, dude, how like cheap and easy and fun album making can be now when you have the right tools and the right collaborator. It's like, I'm sure you feel it like writing, when you have the right concept in the right context, it flows. Can be the easiest thing in the world, or it can be the most hard, difficult, horrendous thing in the world. And like, this record was very fun and easy to make, which in my experience, when an album of mine has been fun and easy to make, it's the one that fans like, ironically. So, yeah, that it was fast. I mean, we launched a Kickstarter in June or May, and we finished the record basically like last month. Yeah, and, but we didn't stop.
Right? Well, we finished recording last month. We're still like,
you're still mixing because the whole album's not out as of talk. The EP's out.
Yeah,
right. And that was really just for to like advance folks for interviews and to give the Kickstarter supporters, you know, something to show them like, hey, it is coming along. We just didn't really want to rush it because we were like racing toward this kind of arbitrary deadline given ourselves. But, and I'm so glad that we pumped the brakes on that and said, you know what, here's an EP instead, because there's like kind of some magic in there that we need to.
Well, and in the Kickstarter feed, no one was mad. When you guys said, hey guys, here's the EP. No one was like, boo, there were no virtual tomatoes. I know. Was like, cool, thanks.
See, if it had been just me, they would be mad, but nobody can get mad at MC Lars because look at him.
Oh, look at him.
What a charming, joyful beast he is.
Well, that's sweet. Well, that's because our fans are so nice. I mean, when I did my Zombie Dinosaur record, it came out 5 months after it was supposed to, and it was, people were cool about it. You know, I mean, as long as you tell them. If you just dip with their money, that's not tight at all.
I think that's it with anything that you do in Kickstarter. I mean, it always says on the Kickstarter, you know, spot, it's not a guarantee, but no Kickstarter that I've ever supported have I not. I mean, some haven't filled, and so therefore, you know, they didn't take the money, but I've never supported a Kickstarter and then didn't get something, and even if it's just running late or whatever, like, you know, hey, postage is more, so it's going to take a little bit longer to get to you or whatever the thing is. And you're like, all right. Yeah, because, you know, it's such a cool idea. And like you talked about, Lars, how now that you've got your own home studio and it's so much different from even like, I mean, the difference between like when you guys started, you know, this 15-year difference, it's almost like the Stone Age, you know, it's like such a weird, different way.
Yeah.
But also that way that you get to people, not just like making it in your house and the fact that you guys didn't even need to get together, but like that ability to reach fans, that idea of kickstarting or using your Patreon, you know, to get to people, has that changed? Does that change or does that put more pressure on you? Like if you're self-financing the record, you're like, you'll get it when you get it. But the fact that you did this, does that frustrate the art in any way? Or does that make it a little more freeing? Because you're like, these, like you said, Lars, these are the people who are supportive. These are our fans anyway. We know they're going to be cool.
Well,
we both have Patreon. So I would love to know how that has changed the way that you interact with your art and your fans.
The thing that I've liked that I like about anything that is subscription based or reward based, you know, Patreon, Kickstarter, et cetera, the benefit for me is the urgency that it gives it a timeline. Because if left to my own devices, I will George Lucas something for years and just never let it go and like be very precious about every note and every syllable of everything. And I had a hard time breaking away from that, but starting a Patreon, you know, 4 years ago and having this like monthly schedule and promising more content than I had any right to do, has been really beneficial to me because I feel like I've found a balance where I don't feel like I'm phoning things in or just not caring about it because, you know, it's time sensitive, but like still putting the same quality of work into it, but just like finding a point during it where I'm like, this is done. I can't work on this any longer. I have to keep moving. And that's the only way that it's changed the way I interact with the actual art itself. For my audience on Patreon, I still like, I don't pander to them at all. I still just kind of write whatever it is, whatever I want to. And sometimes that's challenging and ugly and difficult and alienating, but I keep doing it because I'm like, hey, I stuck to my schedule this month and I deserve rewards. But working on this one, I think was like, I'm not so quite as, I haven't been quite as concerned about the audience, but there is no filter usually between me and releasing something. So working on something collaboratively with Lars has been really helpful too, to be like, sometimes I just can't even tell, like, am I making a mistake here with this particular song? So that's been
no, right? Lars, the answer has been no, you're not.
Never. Yeah. We're all pretty honest with each other about our demos and stuff. And like one song that was technically very hard or different was the Pleasure Island song, which is the Pinocchio song that where they take them to the Island, and it's a sea shanty because it's the song they sing on the boat.
Oh, nice. As they're taking the kids. Oh, amazing. That is the most terrifying moment of all the Disney movies of my childhood.
That whole sequence is so dark, and it's a pretty like epic storyteller track that's about, again, doesn't, we wrote a song that's technically about the Pinocchio universe, but Pinocchio's not in it. It's just about Pleasure Island.
So it's like Pinocchio meets Coleridge. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
And nice.
That's kind of what it is. Well, and it's just like 5 minutes for you to think about child trafficking.
Oh,
because that's real. I mean, we're not really, we didn't use it as a metaphor. We just told the story as it was in the movie. And like, you can figure it out because they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
But it's still, that's like, it was such a dark moment in Disney to uncover, which I didn't really have a very familiar memory of at the time we were writing it. And then after watching it again a couple of times, was like, it's so horrifying. And
it is.
That's my favorite song on the album.
When the kid is crying that he wants to behave when he's being turned into a donkey and wants his mom, so sad.
It's too late. Oh my god.
He doesn't turn all the way and they're like, oh, you know, we gotta do.
Oh yeah. Nothing good. Yeah. It is pretty horrific. Yeah, and I couldn't even bring myself to watch the Del Toro one because I was like, well, that's gonna be stuff of nightmare. So I didn't do it. Well, this is amazing. And I know, I appreciate, I know it's late where we're recording. It's early when you're listening, or late when you're listening, or it's Australia when you're listening, whatever time it is there, that's when you're listening. But we actually, Comics in Motion, where this will come out on one of the feeds, Paul's going to put it out on his feed too. Comics in Motion, we get lots of downloads in India. So good morning, India, as you're listening to this. I haven't figured out what they love about the Comics in Motion feed, but you guys will be big there, I guess.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. So, okay. So tell everybody, so we're coming to the end. So two final questions and then you'll say your thing. So was there something on the cutting room floor? Like, was there some horrific, is there going to be 1,000, 1,001? Will that album exist? Or is this something you want to revisit this? Like, you're like, oh man, we didn't quite crack that scary thing. So we'll have to come back to it.
Well, I think there are a few ideas that we didn't end up doing that were good that we could revisit. I don't know if we'd do another full Disney record, but I there was a song about Mickey's Christmas Carol about the death of Tiny Tim that like I wanted to write about. And we had an idea of doing like a song about the Star Tours ride, but that felt too much in the Star Wars universe. That could be its own thing.
Sure.
And I really wanted to, I was really trying to make a black hole song happen. I watched it again a couple of times and started writing notes, and I just couldn't get the right grasp on it, and it felt starting to feel belabored. So I moved on, but I'd still
it'll
like
be on the 10th anniversary reissue. You'll put it out on like purple wax or something, and you'll save it for then.
Yeah.
All right. That's amazing. Tight. Yeah. Okay. And so the final question before you plug everything and say everybody where everybody can get you, you guys said, and I don't know if you can give away, so it may be a secret, because in the Kickstarter notes, it said the reason that not all the tracks are finished is because there's some guest vocalist or background vocals. Can you give everybody a sneak peek of whose other voices besides yours we're going to hear?
There's a rapper named JT Music, a great nerdcore duo, Stupendium, a British amazing artist, and then MC Snacks, who's a Canadian rapper. And then there are some Jordan Katz, who produced the De La Soul record and won a Grammy for that. Or at least he was nominated. He did a bunch of string parts, banjo and mandolin on our Pinocchio song. And we have some cool stuff like that. And Schaefer is good at adding some live drums.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You play drums. So, you can see if you want people. This is a great look at that segue, Lars. You set me right up. So if you were to go to if people wanted to see video of you playing drums, Schaefer, where would they find you? Because I've seen video of you playing drums. I've seen you play drums in an MCA tribute video, which is delightful as well, while you're rapping MCA lyrics and playing the drums, which although Mike D is the drummer, but still, I will let it pass. I will, because it was amazing to see. So if people wanted to see all that, how could they find it?
Well, the best way to find it, anything of mine, is to just go to SchaeferTheDarkLord.com. It's a pretty simple website. It's mostly just a bunch of links to social media platforms. So you can find my Patreon and YouTube and Instagram, etc. That way.
There you go. Lars, where are you?
NCLars.com, same sort of links and everything like that. And I'm just glad I get to talk to you guys. And it's been real cool.
It has been
Spotify.
Cool. Anyway, Spotify, we talked about that when you were on before. And again, link in the show notes to that. Like, I have a complicated relationship with Spotify because I'd rather buy a record. But I know you said that you don't mind it because even if it gives you some money a month, you know, like you want people. I suck because I buy it and then I download it and listen to it offline. And then I'm not streaming it. So I'm actually only giving you money once, where people who buy
that's
it
fine.
And then
that's...
stream it.
That's so nice of you, though.
Yeah, I'm old, and I even have like an old, you know, I have MP3 player and I download stuff and listen offline. So where will people get this, though? This particular, when this is done and the Kickstarter's done. And so people who weren't part of the Kickstarter, I know how I'll get it. You'll send me an email. It'll be like, hey, it's in your Kickstarter file. Where will everybody else get it?
The full album will release in January, but there will be we'll be releasing some singles along the way, and those will be available on Spotify. And okay. If you follow us on any social media, we'll be plugging the hell out of every time we drop. Okay.
I know you're going to do physical. Will there be any special physical printings? Nice.
There's a vinyl, and we've had just physical distribution for the other vinyl, so it'll be in stores. So. Look nice. For that in the hip hop section. Yeah, I think that's always
look
a
for
fun
that in
thing.
The hip hop section. I love that there that's back. I love that record stores are back. That's exciting, right? I mean,
cool.
That is cool.
Gen X will never die.
We will never die, although everybody forgets about us. This was amazing. Thank you for this. So everybody, you can just go to my website, arfarina.com. You can meet me there, send me notes, subscribe to my newsletter, whatever. Most importantly, get this record, listen to these guys. The thing that I love about Nerdcore, both of you guys, as a nerd, I love that you guys are just like, I can write about things that I care about or that I find interesting, and I'll make them interesting. And it doesn't have to be, there's no, you know, plug and play anything with you guys. You never know what you're going to get. And that is the joy of what you both make. So thank you for making lovely art
thank
in
you.
The world.
You're a really good host. Great interviewer. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. Well, you heard that. I'm going to clip that, and we're going to, Lars, as Lars said. Okay. We'll see everybody next time. Bye.
Peace. Bye, guys.
Looking back, I should have stopped the interview and fled when the boss they called the wizard tossed my resume and said,
now listen, kid, I don't care about your college or your grades or your references. I only like results and getting paid. If you can show me that you've got the goods to get ahead and earn, then I can promise you that you will fit in nicely at this firm.
Oh, thank you, sir. I will not let you down.
And off I went to work. I was determined to impress him and assured I'd keep my word. But quickly, I was overwhelmed and started falling far behind the other hires. I was tired, keeping up was hard. But if I had my own assistant, I thought I could be a star. And so I bought one by the baggie in the bathroom of a bar. Then I started going harder, faster than the others. I was shining while the luster of my peers began to suffer. Working later than the wizard kept my tricks from figured out. When the cap's away, the mouse will play. I'm the wizard now.